Hello.
Hi, Rob. It's Anthony and Tony. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Abe is actually at lunch. He'll be here in about 10 minutes. So.
Well, okay. All right. Well, good. Let's get let's get your perspective on things while we have you, and give you a chance to ask questions. And
yeah, I am. Been a while since we've spoken.
I know.
I'm fresh off vacation. I was out last week, so I am. I'm getting back up to speed on everything. I know I wasn't on the call.
Well, we had a good call.
Oh yeah, tell me about it.
Well, we had we talked a lot about whether or not it made sense to start a mastermind group, and the advantages of, you know, at some point you have to start it, right? I mean, you got to go forward.
Right.
And having, you know, separate mastermind groups rather than having a team mastermind group, I think that makes the most sense. It gives more leverage to everything you're trying to do.
You said having separate mastermind groups?
Yeah. Yep.
Can you elaborate a little on that?
Well, you're trying to build your practice, right?
Right.
So you should have, I mean, you've got a very good relationship with the estate planning attorney that's going to, I think, turn out to be who never know, right? A lifelong advocate for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be your center of influence and your beginning of your mastermind group and so forth. You can separate yourselves into different niches too, depending on what you want to do, you know, what makes the most sense for you. He's really focused in on the real estate. You know, everybody in his mastermind group is kind of all realtors in the real estate business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably makes more sense than to make it a niche mastermind group around realtors. I mean, yours could be anything that you wanted. You don't have to have a niche mastermind group, but it just gives everybody focus.
Sure.
You know, so whatever they specialize in, if they have a niche, then you kind of find other people that have that same niche, and then you focus on that. So one of the things, you know what different niches are. We've talked about them. It was a good, that was all good, I think, good discussion.
Okay. I did have actually one question for you. I wanted to pick your brain up. So I'm actually, you know, I work very closely with Abe, and, you know, he and I are very close, and we have mutual clients together, and we're going to continue working together in the future. But there are other advisors in the office that I guess have, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I guess taken notice on, you know, my proactive approach to running plans and bringing in assets and things like that. So I've been getting some advisors that, you know, are cleaning their book rather than sending their clients to the advisory center in Utah. They're wanting to, you know, just transfer them to me. So how would you go about, you know, because I don't want to give that advisor additional work. I want to basically take that client from them and run with it. And,
right,
you know, certain advisors are on board with that, where they're like, okay, I don't even want to call this client. Why don't you call to introduce them or write an email? So if you were, let's say, writing an email, you know, how would you transition?
I would remember the 5-time rule. I'd do both. I would write them a real letter, and
okay.
I would call them immediately, upon being assigned the client, call first. Your purpose is to get, if they're worth getting, they're worth getting an appointment with, okay? So if you don't want to take them because they're too small to have an appointment, don't take them at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to go see them because they're not a client until they do business with you. Meaning they're not a client until you pull the trigger and they buy something or sell something or, yeah, buy or sell something, okay? Or pay you a fee. I mean, even if they pay you a fee, it's not the same as when they take your advice and they make a change. So you've got to get a transaction of some kind under your belt with each one of them before you know that they're a client. Otherwise, they could leave tomorrow.
Right. So you would call first?
I would call for an appointment. And I would go see them. And I'd interview them. And I'd see what was there. And, I mean, you're a good profiler, right? You understand. So you want to do a financial plan for them.
Right. I don't want to. Sometimes I feel like if I lead with that, rather than kind of at least building some rapport the first month or two, it almost seems like I'm just trying to sell them something, even though I'm not charging them for a financial plan. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah, but here's what happens when you profile them properly by doing a financial plan. You really get to know them.
Sure.
That's the point. It isn't the plan that matters. It's you knowing them inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what you want to do. And one of the questions you want to always ask is, what did you like about your former advisors, and what didn't you like? So what did you like and what didn't you like?
How would you phrase... You know, because I guess some clients sense like they're just being, you know, passed off. How would you phrase it to them, you know, or, hey, I'm working with, let's call the other advisor, Ted. You know, the way that I've always done it is, you know, Ted and I work closely together.
Right.
You know, he brought up your name and your account, and he asked if I would take lead on your account. So, you know, moving forward, I want to be your financial advisor. I mean, that's kind of how I phrase it, give or take. Is there anything that you would say in particular in the introduction to make them feel like they're not just being passed down to a more junior advisor?
Well, I think I'd phrase it a little differently, like they got promoted rather than demoted. And the way I would do that is that Ted knows that I specialize in helping people like you. I specialize and do the financial planning for a number of financial advisors in the office. And he's asked me to take a look at your situation and see if I can help you.
Okay, that's good.
And he'll say, "What do you mean? Now, what are you talking about?" Well, I do financial planning. That's what I do. And so your situation looks perfect for me in the sense that, you know, you've got a family, you've got kids, you've got this, you've got that, whatever it is, right? Everybody needs financial planning.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a couple of kids that are going to be ready for college. You've got this, you've got that. You know, that takes some planning. You've got to do some thinking about that stuff.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, you're getting ready for retirement. This is a critical time to do some planning. You've got to do some budgeting. You don't want to, you know, nobody spends the right amount. This is really an interesting concept. No one spends the right amount of money in retirement. They either spend too much or they spend too little. Now, it may not be egregious, but in either case, you can help them, particularly if it's egregious, either way, right? Some people spend nothing, and they just don't enjoy the latter years of their life because they don't think they can afford it. And they can. So you give them permission to take that cruise to the Med, right? Or you give them a trip that, you know, lifetime trip to Italy. Or they spend too much and you save their ass by putting them on a budget and holding their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
And having the talk with both of them, you know, the talk. So there's a lot of real value you can bring, even to clients that don't, you know, have a huge amount of money.
Right.
So it's good practice for you. And what you want to do is use them as centers of influence to get introductions to other people.
Sure.
So it doesn't make any sense for you to take these smaller accounts unless you leverage them.
Yeah, no, they're not smaller. I mean, some are, they're, you know, 300 to 500,000. So
my that's small.
Huh?
Yeah, that's small.
Well, right. I agree in the grand scheme of things, but I'm in the program, so I can't really afford to take anything or not take anything less than 100,000. Just because even on our level.
No, I understand. I understand, but remember, time is the most important thing that you have, even though you don't think it is. It's still the most important thing. And every client that you take on requires a minimum of 6 hours and probably closer to 12.
6 hours of what? A week?
Your time. Yep.
That each client takes 6 hours a week of my time?
No. It's a year.
Oh, a year. Okay.
Yeah. Well, every client represents a minimum of 6 hours and probably closer to 12 and some 20 hours because they have extensive planning.
Right.
So every time you take on a client, you just suck 6 hours out of your business life.
Okay.
If you're doing 12-4-2, which I assume you would.
Right. I'm actually doing a, because I have more clients. You know, I love the Supernova premise, so I'm doing kind of a watered-down version of it where I'm contacting clients quarterly because I have that many more clients. Once I graduate the program after the third year, I'm going to start implementing the 12-4-2, which is when I'm going to start. Hopefully, I can get to my goal of 300,000 in revenue and just start weeding out, you know, the C clients and start giving them back to younger advisors. That's my goal.
Right. Well, Supernova gives you a unique value in the market. And I know, you know, client, I understand why you wouldn't do 12-4-2 with somebody with 300,000.
Right.
But you get somebody with a million or plus, I would definitely do 12-4-2 now.
Yeah, I actually give them the option, and that's actually right about the number. You know, if it's anything 800,000 or above, I give them the option. You know, we can talk as frequently as monthly, and some of them have selected to do so, and then others have said, no, I think quarterly is fine. So I do give them the option. But if I were to give everybody that option and we were speaking monthly, I wouldn't have any time because I have so many clients. I couldn't even tell you how many clients I have.
How many do you have?
I couldn't tell you because I have a partnership with Abe, and then I have a partnership with Peter Klein, who's Abe's partner. And then I have another one with another partnership with David Tillman, and then I have another partnership with the Schultz Group. So I'm kind of very thin.
When you say you have a partnership, how many clients are you responsible in these partnerships?
So with Abe, I would say probably about 15. With Peter, probably another 15. With David Tillman, probably about 20 or so, and that's growing pretty heavily. With the Schultz, probably another 30 or so. And then with the Machados, probably another 15. And that's just the partnerships. Right, and I'm not responsible for 100% of the work that needs to be done with them, but at least 50% of the work that needs to be done with those clients. And then
are you getting 50% of those revenues?
On most of them, I am.
All right, pretty good deal.
Yeah. And then I have my book, you know, by myself, where it's probably maybe another 40 or 50 clients. So I know I am kind of spread thin, but I like it that way because I'm increasing my numbers every month, and there's a lot of prospecting internally that's done that way. I've been able, with Peter's clients, for example, he hasn't done any planning, so I'm kind of focusing on the planning side.
Sure, you can uncover lots of assets and things.
Well, yeah, we brought in, you know, about $3 million last month, you know, from one client who had his assets elsewhere, and yeah, that was just the second plan I think I ran for his clients. So there's a lot of internal opportunity, if you will.
Yep. And the management must love that.
Nico is, he's liking it.
Yeah, but I mean, because you're exactly what, like, Peter needs. I mean,
right.
Otherwise it's just dead money for the next, you know, 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so that's my goal really. You know, my goal is to get to that 300,000 mark at the end of the program, and then at that point, please look at who I'm going to be working with in the future.
All right. So why don't you need to set a minimum though, Anthony?
My minimum is 100,000.
No, no, no. You really need to change it. You need to raise your minimum. You got too many clients here. You got too much work.
So what do you think it should be? 250?
I think you should make it 300.
300? Okay.
300.
I think I can work with that. That's fair.
It makes it rational for you and them and everybody. Below that, it's just a complete waste of your time.
Yeah.
So you gotta really embrace some of these concepts of supernova.
Right. The 300,000 new minimum.
And you gotta have a max of 100 clients. So you gotta keep track of what you're doing here.
Hey guys.
Because you can't get overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the things that I've spoken even, you know, to Abe and you know, other mentors and partners. I'm not at that point yet where I am overwhelmed. Because, like, the clients that I mentioned where I'm working with Abe and, you know, like, other partners and stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, it's not like I'm 100% responsible or working 100%
right.
for that, you know.
So, Emily, good talk. Is that Abe? Did you just check in?
Yes, my apologies for being late to our call.
No, thank you. It was good. Anthony got a chance to have a nice private session, and I think we gave it was valuable. It's valuable for you, and it's valuable for him because we went back, and I mean, I have a much better understanding of what he's doing and what he's trying to accomplish, and where he is in terms of time management and other things, and obviously he's doing very well. But Abe, why don't you tell? I mean, Anthony, tell Abe what my conclusions and advice was, and then, if you don't mind, just sharing what you kind of agreed to.
Yeah, so I first asked Rob if given, a new client from an advisor, how should I start the introduction? He mentioned that I should call them first and then follow up with a letter letting them know that, I would be working with them. He actually, he said that one of the best ways to transition is to be, have a positive transition, and say that, the advisor prior knows, him and I work together and knows that I specialize in clients or situations such as yourself. And I can help you with that along those lines. And at that point, they would ask, how could you help me? What do you specialize in? And I would talk about financial planning and kind of take it from there. And then we were talking about the structure of my practice and how I know that I'm all over the place, because I work with you and David and Peter and the Schultz and all that, and the Machados. So he says I should focus on having a max client of 100. Maximum clients, 100 clients, and then I should bump my minimum up from 100,000 to 300,000.
Sounds good.
So that's kind of where we got. Sounds a little scary.
Well, good, it should.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's,
I mean,
are
what do
you
you
saying?
think, what do you think of that, Abe?
I think it's good. It's right on the money. Rob, are you saying that if I'm if I'm reassigning someone to Anthony, that I should not be the person who calls the client to let him know?
Oh, and that's in a sharing situation. If you're going to permanently reassign it,
Rob, if I
I
can
think,
interject here,
yeah.
I asked Rob if, because I would prefer if the advisor doesn't want him. If you want to call a client, that'd be even better. But if I don't want to give the advisor that's transitioning that client to me more work than they have to. So I'll give you an example. Brian just gave me a client. So I called him Ted. I just came up with a name, but Brian gave me a client the other day, and he said that he was going to call them. And I had told him the way that I'd done it before, if the advisor didn't feel like they wanted to call him, that I would just introduce myself and
Sure.
tell him, and then he kind of came back and said, oh, you know what? Why don't you just call him? I said, sure, I'd be more than happy.
Sure.
So that's kind of why I asked that.
I mean, if you wait for the FAs to call, then most of them will never call.
Right.
Well,
Right, then that. I mean, I think that all is, sounds good. It makes a lot of sense.
yeah, I mean, it's always best if you can call, obviously, but I mean, some of these guys clearly don't care. And so, I mean, what Anthony's offering is a whole lot more than they've had in the past. And they're going to be delighted to hear from somebody, and they're going to be delighted to get a financial plan. So it's all good. I mean, from Nico's point of view, it's a gold mine. Anything he can free up from these guys is going to go from dead money to financial plan plus mortgages and fee-based services and all kinds of good things and more assets. He just told me he brought in $3 million from one client that he had went to see. And so I mean it's great. I mean, and obviously Anthony, you are talented, and so keep going. But what I'm hearing is success, And with success comes time crunch. And so you've got to bring some discipline to it so you don't end up overwhelmed and then hurting yourself so that you can't take on that $1 million client that somebody wants to reassign because you've got, you know, six of them at 100,000 and they're killing
right.
you.
Right. Yeah.
Even though it doesn't seem like they're killing you, they are.
Right.
So you got it. Yeah. You want to. And we talked about 12-4-2 versus Butler's. And, you know, at, and I just said at the $1 million level, you really should be utilizing 12-4-2 because it just, I mean, if a guy's got $1 million, he probably has more. And so, you know, the 12-4-2 is going to keep him, plus it's going to get you more. It's going to get you referrals. And what I said was it's really important to use these clients as centers of influence to get introductions because, you know, you're doing them the biggest favor in the world at 300,000, giving them your time and energy. They should be giving you introductions to bigger people. And that's, you know, that's really the way they can pay you for your time. So anyway, it's all good, right?
It's all good.
So, Abe, how was your week and what's on your mind?
The week was very good. I mean, it's all, everything has become much more active. You know, there's a lot more going on than there used to be in my practice in terms of my outreach efforts to other professionals. The mastermind group is taking shape. We have our first applicant for the group. And, you know, I'm booked for lunch now for almost as far as the eye can see, because I'm not, you know, going to lunch anymore, just with, you know, whoever's around in the office who, okay, hey guys, you want to grab lunch? You know, there's just a lot more activity, a lot of good stuff going on.
That's great.
What did you think of my niche mastermind group idea?
Oh, I'd love it.
Okay.
I mean, I love it. You know, the one we talked about, you mean with people moving in from South Florida, you mean? I mean,
No, the idea around opportunity zones.
Oh, where did you tell me that, or did you email, or what?
I emailed it to you on Friday.
Oh, shoot. I didn't get it. Sorry.
No problem. But the idea was to educate, to teach the other members in the mastermind group about opportunity zones, and then for our group to really specialize in them and find people who that concept would benefit from.
It's really smart. Now, where did this come from? Where did this idea come from?
Well, I was interested in an alternative investment that we offer. I've been aware of opportunity zones. We rolled out a fund several months ago that fund closed, and now we have another fund that we just launched. And it's I think it's an area there where because it's pretty new in the tax law that a lot of FAs are not even aware of.
Yep.
So I think it could be a great entree for CPAs and attorneys, business brokers, realtors, anybody who's aware of anyone who just sold an asset for a substantial capital gain.
So tell me how it works.
Basically, if you sold an asset and realized a capital gain, you have 180 days during which time if you either make a direct investment or if you invest in a fund that does a direct investment in an opportunity zone, which is something that was created in the recent tax law change. And there's over 8,700 opportunity zones in the country. Specifically, these would be areas that have been historically underdeveloped. You get some great tax benefits. Specifically, your capital gain is deferred. The capital gains tax are deferred and if you hold the new investment for 10 years, 15% of your capital gains tax is forgiven. You pay the tax at the end when you sell the original investment, or when you sell the new investment, plus any gain on the new investment within the opportunity zone is tax-free.
Shit. Shoot. Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So it would appeal to somebody who just sold some type of asset, either it can be securities, it can be a business, it can be real estate, it can be really any asset that would realize a capital, generate a capital gain, which, you know, those are all the right people we want to be talking to.
Sure. So
yeah.
are there happen to be any opportunity zones in your area?
There certainly are.
So in Miami area, there are.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so you got to be a little careful doing. You can't do anything away from your firm.
Right.
But
nor would I want to. But the idea is that, assuming that we'll always. Right now, we have a fund that exists to take in investor money and to make investments within qualified opportunity zones. So
right.
That counts. And so the idea is, you know, some people might want to do the investment directly themselves by buying land in an area, you know, and building
right.
a building. Or other, if you don't want to do that, we have a fund that you can go into.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
So you just have to be careful that it doesn't look like, you know, you're endorsing somebody building a building.
Oh, certainly not.
You got to be just really, I'm just, you know, it's just, that's my
right.
Mr. Compliance Officer comes out in me. But
exactly.
on the other hand, you can certainly receive introductions, and
yeah.
you can be associated loosely with people doing things like that. You just can't refer people to them to do it. That's all.
Exactly. That's exactly
yeah, you
right.
can't refer clients, but
right.
you know. But I think it's a brilliant idea. Just always be aware, and I would even if you're gonna do this, I almost would take minutes from your meetings just to make it clear that you're never recommending, you know, that somebody, one of your clients ever does this. Okay.
Right.
I'm just, yeah. Because
right.
I love it. I love what you're doing. I could see it just easily slipping into something where you're named in a lawsuit because something fails.
Sure, I get that. I mean, I think the
okay.
idea, you know, I think the idea is that if, you know, somebody, you know, that we run across, whether it be a client or a prospect, is in a position where it would make sense, you know, we're saying that, you know, you should talk to your tax advisor, your legal advisor, about whether or not this might be right for you, and, you know, if you'd like an introduction to professionals who know, you know, are well versed in this area, we can certainly recommend a few for you to sit down and interview. But you know, we're never the ones saying you should do this.
Yeah, yeah. Just be careful of that.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. I think you can refer them for tax advice on general things.
Yeah.
Okay. But I wouldn't refer them for tax advice or investment advice on that subject.
Okay.
Okay, because that would be too close a link to an introduction to a product that they end up investing in, and
right.
then they come back to you and say, hey, you're the one that said this was a good idea. You sent me
sure.
to such and such. He invested my money, and I lost it all. I'm naming you, and I'm naming your firm. And
right.
you know, then the firm freaks out, they pay him off, and they fire you.
Yeah, sure,
so,
that's not what I want to see happen.
Okay, I'm just telling you, it's just, I've just watched too many guys get too close to those situations and end up, getting bagged.
Sure.
But I love the idea. And, you know, as long as you can keep an arm's length to that. So how shall I say this? I would not make that my topic of the mastermind group, okay?
Okay.
I would make it real estate investments.
Gotcha.
In general, okay? And we're specializing in real estate. If someone
sure.
happens to need, you know, go to somebody and they happen to invest in something that had nothing to do with me or our group, you know. That was just, that was coincidental.
Sure.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And if they, you know, they can refer to you as much as they want to.
For sure.
Because you do the due diligence and that's all good. You just can't refer to them to any
right.
investment. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So you can refer to them for professional advice in the real estate world, but you just keep it general. Is the way I would do it. It's too tight. It's too tight. It's too easy a line to follow,
sure.
from a compliance point of view. But do I love the idea? Yes.
Okay.
Just understand that the lines can't be. Oh, we're all got together and there's 10 guys and we're all putting the money into this building.
Right. No, I understand that.
Okay. It's unfortunate, but that's the reality.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, but I originally liked your real estate focus. I think that's a really good one. And I like your people relocating to South Florida. I think that's a, you know, whether you do that one and, you know, I mean, you do the real estate one, Anthony does the people locating to South Florida, who cares? But I talked to Anthony and I said, you should have separate ones.
Yeah.
Should have separate mastermind groups.
Now,
can you you can collaborate like hell, but you should, it's like two guys digging the same hole. You know, you don't need to both be in there. In the same, you don't want to have two guys in the same meeting.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. I thought that Julian would be a great candidate for the mastermind group I'm building, but it really doesn't make sense because that's your relationship.
If you think he's a good fit and you want to include him, I 100% would want you to. You know what I mean?
No, I mean,
it's up to you, but
I appreciate I think I should be trying to find my own, that doesn't mean that I don't want to put time and energy into developing that relationship with you, but I think it makes sense for me to find my own, because the problem is if I'm referring my clients to Julian, he's, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but, it kind of where, now you and I are sharing a COI instead of, we each have a COI. You know, it almost kind of, in a sense, it diminishes, it cuts his value in half to us,
right.
Do you agree with that, Rob?
Well, it would depend. If it's a $10 million client, there's plenty to go around, right? You split
right.
it and it's great.
Sure. Yeah.
But if they're referring $1 million clients, then, it's not really worth it. So, Anthony, I think you're the lead on it and you feel it out, okay? And you see whether or not, this makes sense. You can always bring Abe in on situations and, where you think there needs to be a little deeper knowledge and experience to bring in a $10 million client. Mm-hmm. But, I think you want to be doing you want to be doing in parallel what Abe's doing. I mean, that's the advantage of these calls, is that you get a chance to learn and actually activate processes that you typically wouldn't get involved in for 4 years or something like that. You can do them now. You can form a mastermind group now. There's nothing wrong with you doing that. In fact, it's really smart. But if you need to bring Abe in to create some credibility, God bless you, bring him in. And Abe, you volunteer and help him out, you know, wherever he needs to shore up his thing. But, you know, in the end, maybe you guys end up being full-on partners someday down the road. But in the meantime, you can just collaborate and have fun and work together and develop, you know, parallel businesses and just see how it goes, you know?
Yeah, that makes good sense.
Yeah. So, you know, I work with teams, like five-person teams, and they're always asking me, well, should we have one mastermind group for the team? I said, no. I mean, that's such a waste. I mean, you could have five mastermind groups. Think of the leverage of that. Now, you know, somebody's no good at, you know, that's not where their talents lie, and not they have no interest in it, then they just don't participate in it. They go do something else. But if you see it works and you like the idea of it, then have your own group, you know. So anyway, how's the listening going on, and what are you getting out of it?
How's what?
Listening to the chapters.
Oh, it's going fine. I mean, I've been more focused on the videos than the audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious, as you know, it's a learning thing, right? I'm a teacher, so I'm always curious as to how people best learn, and spaced repetition and the audio is kind of a fascination for me now, to see if people get more, you know, dramatically more out of it than they do by reading the book once or reading it twice. And the videos are great, you know, in combination with listening to the book and reading it and things. But I just want you to be completely fluent in Supernova, you know, in the Supernova multiplier. And I want you to, this is sort of an experiment with me too. So I appreciate
okay.
it if you can do that and just see what the psychological benefits, because what I'm hearing is that it stimulates creative thought. They don't always, you know, you start listening to it on the way to work. You don't hear it because your mind goes somewhere else but you're mm-hmm. thinking about the work, you know, you're
right.
thinking about that piece of the work, and you hear different things every time you hear different things every time you listen to it, even though it's the
yeah.
same chapter. So that's kind of what I'm after, is that
yeah.
kind of creative thought. You know, you could even have your guys, you know, you get somebody like, you each have you have your estate planning attorney, Anthony, and you've got these guys that are theoretically going to be partners in this mastermind group. You could have them listen to the book, right?
Yeah.
Listen to that chapter or read the book. Read that chapter. You could give them a book as a present and say, please read this chapter. I'd really like you to be fluent in this mastermind group idea.
Okay.
That's not asking too much for them to do some homework.
No, that's not a big ask.
No. And I think it would probably make them more comfortable, because then they would be able to visualize what the heck we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good idea, and I hadn't actually thought of that before. So that's a kind of a new idea. I've always suggested people give the book away, or give, you know, the Supernova book away to market what they're doing. You know, here's my coach, and this is what we're doing and why we're doing it. You want to read it? Great. We'd love you to, but here's the ideas. But I've never really thought about handing the book, the multiplier, to somebody and say, read chapter 7. That's what we're doing in marketing.
Right.
You know, this guy said, we've had real success with this in our industry. And I think, you know, rather than you going into this blindly with just a few suggestions from me, here's the idea in detail. I think that's good. But I really love the fact, Gabe, that you're really busy now. You got a lot of activity going on. And of course, what happens, right? Like with Anthony being busy, 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 you're going to have a lot of success. I mean, it's just going to happen.
Right.
We call it playing in traffic. You know, there's a lot going on. Anytime you're meeting every day for lunch with somebody, something's got goods coming out of it.
Well, I'm meeting on August 8th. I'm going up to the Humane Society to tour their facilities and meet with the development lady and talk about how I can get involved and make an impact there.
Great. That's great. Really good. You've got a lot going on. You got a lot of, you know, you're doing all kinds of good things. It's great. Go ahead. Question?
I had lunch today with Adam Carlin, who's one of our the most successful advisors in Morgan Stanley and happens to be here in our office, to talk specifically about how he built his book and also around getting involved in charitable organizations. I wanted to pick his brain, and he basically said all the things you did, but I also wanted his color on organizations here in South Florida that he's been involved with and ones he's also found to be not very useful. He actually steered me away from one of them that was on my list because he had been on their board and it was just completely dysfunctional. So I found it to be very worthwhile. His point is to expect to make a major financial contribution to them. You know, he was saying that he started off with, making, right off the bat, a big contribution. My fear in doing that is you make a big contribution and then you find out there's not much there.
Yeah, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. Big is a different, what's big, right? I mean, there's all kinds of different numbers for what's big. The idea is to be of value to them.
Yeah.
And that can be in various forms. By just writing a check, sometimes people think I just took care of my obligation.
Right.
Well, they are looking for a combination. They want leadership. They want participation. They want fundraising. They want expertise in money management, in managing their affairs, in balancing their budget. And so an adult in the room is of great value to them.
Right. Well,
because in many cases, a lot of them don't have adults on their boards. They've got passionate people on the subject of whatever it is.
Well, his point was that writing a big check or making a big pledge got him in the room with all the other major donors and got him access to those folks that he wanted to really connect with.
But won't you be in the room with them anyway?
I mean, I suppose so.
I mean, if you're on the board, which is the purpose of being there, you're in the room with the other board of directors, and they're the ones that typically are giving the largest contributions.
Sure.
Now, if it's other people and you know, they're having a cocktail party or a fundraiser, or you know you can get them all together because they're doing a big capital campaign and they want, you know, then that's when you step up. But you don't just write a check, okay?
Gotcha.
You don't just write a check. I write various checks according to, so I wrote, so I'm on the board of the Island School Foundation now. When I first got to the island, I was recommended for it, but the guy that was in charge of it turned me down because he didn't think I had deep enough pockets. Okay?
Okay.
Isn't that funny? It's great. then there was a change of command. The CEO of the company that owns Titleist became the chairman, and he asked me, I was invited to a cocktail party to raise money for the island school. So I made a pledge for $20,000, right? Which I didn't think was very much, and they thought was great, you know. So they then took me seriously and invited me on the board. So now I'm on the board, and I give, you know, I've still got my pledge of 20 out. I've got five more to do on that. And then, you know, five over 4 years, that's nothing, right?
Sure.
And then I did, I'll do for the island, we have a golf thing, I'll give $12,000 for that. So, you know, for 10 grand or something, you can be a hero. You know, you don't need to give 100 grand or something.
Right. I gotcha.
Okay. But you don't want to give 2 grand either.
Right.
So it's, you know, different things require different amounts of money.
Sure.
So you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I always ask, you know, basically what's the downstroke for being a member of the board? You know, what's expected? And, you know, my thing, it's probably 10 grand a year to be on the board. But, so yours might be less. It might be five. It might be, I don't know. Maybe it's 20. Who knows? But there's a kind of a dues for being on the board, and then there's generally a big yearly fundraiser where you buy a table or you give some money.
Sure.
Or whatever. Capital campaigns are different. When they start a capital campaign, then it's like, oh, we want 100, you know. So you got to, you know, that's where you kind of keep your eye out.
Yeah. Well, the Humane Society lady said, well, come on down, you know, you can learn about our organization and get involved. You know, we need people to walk the dogs and clean up poop and stuff like that, which is not really what I had in mind. You know, I want to.
No. You go and you interview them to see if you're a good fit for the board. Okay. If they're a good fit for you and you're a good fit for them, and tell them what you want.
I would imagine most higher quality organizations don't have board openings at any given time, or even necessarily.
Oh yeah, they're always looking. They're always looking for new board members.
Really?
Always. Yeah. Of course.
Should I expect to have to like get involved for a while, volunteer, do stuff before I get
No.
passed board?
No.
I mean,
No, it's all expectation. No, you want to be on the board, and that's what you're doing. That's what you're interviewing for.
Right.
You keep interviewing on different boards until you get an offer to be on the board.
Okay.
It's like deciding that you want to be a financial advisor or you want to be a CA or, you know, CSA. You got to make up your mind what you want to be, right? You're going to interview for being an FA or you're going to interview for being a CSA. There's nothing wrong with being a CSA, right? It's a good job. But at your stage of the business and life, you want to be an officer. You want to be on the board.
What if they say, well, we don't have any board vacancies right at the moment, but you can be on whatever committee and get
involved? Now you're talking. Now you're talking.
Right.
Now you're talking. They're giving you the opening.
Okay. But I don't want to just show up on Saturdays and walk the dogs.
No, you don't. You're not above it, you know,
right.
But at the same time, that's not what you're there for.
You're not a housewife
volunteering your time, okay?
Yeah. I mean, whatever organization I join, whether it's that or something else, I actually do want to get involved and get my hands dirty, you know.
Right.
Actually learning, you know, actually doing the work. I don't want to.
But you want to do it. You want to do it as a board member,
exactly.
Who's taking the time to really understand how everything works.
Exactly. Not as some random volunteer.
No. You don't have time for that. You're a working guy.
Right.
You know, if you're retired and you did nothing to do, go walk the dog. No, that's not what you want. Okay.
Right. Exactly. All right. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really important. The reason he said give a chunk of money is to get on the board, okay?
Right.
You don't want to give the money and then not get on the board. I mean, that'd be stupid, right?
Right, but I also don't want to give the money and get on the board. You know, I don't want to pledge 50 grand to some organization, get on the board, and find out, oh, shit, these guys are a bunch of bozos.
Right. I understand. That's why you're interviewing them. You
right.
want to get their annual report or go on their website, see who the board members are, Google them. Yeah, Google them, see if they're the right guys, and if they're not, then you're in the wrong organization.
Well, this one, for example, has a board of directors, plus it also has trustees.
Yep.
And the trustees are, you know, Donna Shalala is a trustee, other, you know, people I Googled, various names, people who are very successful or wealthy. What are the trustees? They're basically people who give a lot of money and are associated with the organization one way or another, but are not board members.
That's a funny thing. That typically is not, the trustees are usually the board. That's usually the board member.
Yeah.
It's the board of trustees. You know, they run the organization. So if they have two different boards, you want to find out what the heck's the difference.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to see who's the chairman and what's their title.
Right.
The chairman of the board of trustees is, you know, and then they've got the board of advisors or the board of something. Like at Wake Forest, I'm on the Demon Deacon board, right? Now, there's the board of trustees at the university. I don't really want to be on that because I'm interested in the athletic side of things, and I don't want to give, you know, $3 million to be on the board of trustees.
Right.
Doesn't have any interest to me. I'd rather give scholarships to the athletes,
sure.
Right? So you think about what you want, but you got to understand the structure of the organization. So you'll find those are your questions that you're going to ask the director when you're there.
Okay.
But you want to try and do as much homework as you can before you walk in so you look like you're really interested.
Yeah, I read their financials. I reviewed all the stuff available on their website. Looked at who at the board and looked up some of the people on it and really got a feel for who they are.
Good. And if it, you know, if it keeps checking out, then you keep moving forward.
Right. Gotcha.
Okay. But have
okay.
more than one board on your list, right? Remember, the way we figure that out is we interview our clients, and just like asking them the enthusiastically endorsed question, you ask them, can they enthusiastically endorse their charitable involvement? You know, their
right.
What are you involved in, and would you recommend it? You know, I've got some extra time, I've got some money now, and I'd like to be involved in the community, more involved in the community. I'm looking to be involved in different organizations. What are you involved in, and would you recommend it? Basically, would you enthusiastically endorse it?
If hypothetically, let's say my out of town clients, meaning that if my client in Seattle really is into the United Way, do I want to check out the United Way of Miami because she's really passionate about
no.
the United Way, or no?
Negative.
Specific to this location.
Affirmative. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's just local. You want local.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I mean, sometime when you get really big and you're doing 10 million, then you can be on a national organization.
Right. I gotcha.
Okay. But for now, we want Miami, local, civic, you know, we want to be one of the fathers of the community.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right.
All right, good. Yeah, you're doing great. Congratulations. You both are doing terrifically. Way to go. Loving your work. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Good deal.
Yep.